content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, this is Katie Neuhauser reading for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Religion in the News. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from Religion News Service. Today, our first article is entitled AME Church Clergy Could Recover $44 million More in Retirement Scandal Settlement. And the byline reads, quoting, "We still have defendants who are fighting, and we have more work to do, but this is a major step forward in this litigation," said lawyers involved in the case. And here's the article. A federal judge gave preliminary approval to a settlement that could restore tens of millions more in retirement funds to African Methodist Episcopal Church clergy and staffers who lost their money through the denomination's allegedly mishandled plan. The development on Friday, April 17th, comes after the same judge last August approved $60 million in partial settlements, not including interest, for the thousands of clergy and staff who learned in 2021 that much of their expected retirement money was missing. However, legal fees totaled a third of that settlement. The plaintiffs and Symetra Life Insurance Company, a defendant in the case, accepted a mediator's proposal that would allow the affected retirement plan participants to recover an additional $44.4 million if the judge approves it in a hearing set for August 19th in the U.S. District Court for the Western District of Tennessee. According to court documents, the plaintiffs alleged that Symetra was a co-conspirator with the Reverend Jerome Harris, then director of the AME Church's Department of Retirement Services, in misappropriation of the retirement funds. Taking the Symetra settlement with the other settlements already obtained to date, plaintiffs will have recovered a total of approximately $106.2 million, Judge S. Thomas Anderson said in his April 17th order. In light of the risks of going to trial and the additional delay involved in trying the case and concluding all appeals, the settlement represents adequate and immediate relief to the class. Early in the litigation, the plaintiffs, some 4,500 people whose single case was consolidated from six, said around $88.4 million was lost from their retirement funds. They have since argued that the balance of the plan should have been $227 million higher than it was in June 2021. The AME Church, a historically black denomination, and Newport Group Incorporated, a third-party administrator involved with the church's retirement services, reached the earlier partial settlements with the plaintiffs. The AME Church is not directly involved in the current juncture of the litigation. The church is not a party to the settlement with Symetra, and we will not comment on a private settlement that we are not party to, the Reverend Tyronda House Burgess, General Secretary of the AME Church, said in a statement. In the past, the denomination has said that Harris, who retired in 2021 and died in 2024 of a heart attack, provided deceptive, false, and grossly inflated financial statements about the retirement plan. Attorneys for the affected AME clergy and staffers viewed the preliminary approval of the $44.4 million as a positive sign in a case that has lasted almost half a decade. "We are pleased with the settlement with Symetra and proud of what we've been able to accomplish after over 4 years of hard-fought litigation," said plaintiffs' lawyers from seven firms and the AARP Foundation in a statement. "This settlement, if approved, would bring the total recovery to almost $106 million, which should return most of the money that the AME church pastors were told that they had in their accounts in June 2021. We still have defendants who are fighting, and we will have more work to do, but this is a major step forward in this litigation." The Reverend J. Edgar Boyd, a leader of the AME's For Justice and Accountability group, added in an interview, there have been promises from the church that all of the retirement participants will be made whole in the end, and the road of the path now seems to be headed in that direction. Boyd said he hopes the litigation involving Harris's estate, as well as other parties, will continue to bring greater restoration of funds to the clergy and staffers whose retirement accounts were depleted. Some, he said, wound up having to live with friends or family members because they could no longer afford their own homes. The pain, suffering, disappointment, and anxiety and anguish that retirees had to go through to get to this point, I don't know how you put a price tag on that, Boyd said. In February, the church released an update on the Department of Retirement Services, saying that 306 retirement distributions had been made as a result of the first settlements. The Reverend Brian K. Blackwell, director of the department, told Religion News Service on Tuesday that there have now been 339 distributions to participants who have retired from the AME Church. All participants included in the settlement have had their account balances, the combination of legacy fund and settlement fund, restored to approximately 61.5% of the June 30, 2021 statement balance, he said. Those funds can be dispersed upon request for the persons with a distributable event, like retirement, death of the participant, termination, or hardship. Symetra representatives did not immediately respond to a request for comment. And that ends our first article for today. Next up, we have an article entitled, Pope Leo's Delicate Task in Equatorial Guinea, Bless the Faithful, Not the Regime. And the byline is, the Pope is expected to speak about corruption, governance, and the ethical responsibilities of leaders, themes that have defined his African tour. Pope Leo XIV arrived in Equatorial Guinea on Tuesday morning of April 21st, greeted by cheering crowds and a Catholic church that sees his visit as both a spiritual embrace and a moment for national reflection. This visit is like a sign that God has not forgotten his people, said Malabo Archbishop Juan Ijang Maye, ahead of the Pope's arrival. It brings encouragement not only to Catholics, but to the whole nation, especially in times that call for unity and hope. The pontiff landed in Malabo after concluding his visit to Angola, marking the final leg of a multi-country African tour that had consistently emphasized peace, accountability, and the moral responsibilities of leadership. Observers say the Pope's visit comes at a sensitive moment in Equatorial Guinea as growing economic pressures and longstanding governance concerns continue to shape daily life for many citizens. The Vatican has indicated that Pope Leo will address these issues during his visit. Vatican spokesman Matteo Bruni said the Pope is expected to speak about corruption, governance, and the ethical responsibility of leaders, themes that have defined his African tour. His arrival comes at a time of mourning for the Catholic Church in the country after the sudden death of the Reverend Fortunato Sue Ison, Vicar General of the Archdiocese of Malabo, who died at the age of 39 on Friday. Church leaders said the Pope's visit now carries an added spiritual weight as it coincides with a moment of collective grief. The small, oil-rich country on Africa's west coast has a population of about 1.7 million people, according to U.S. government estimates. Christianity is the dominant religion, with roughly 85% to 90% of the population identifying as Christian. Roman Catholics form the majority, while Protestant and Pentecostal communities make up smaller but growing groups. Muslims account for a small minority alongside followers of indigenous beliefs and other religions. The country is defined by stark economic contrasts. The discovery of offshore oil in the mid-1990s transformed the economy, with petroleum accounting for nearly half of the country's GDP and more than 90% of exports, according to the African Development Bank. However, World Bank estimates that more than half of the population lives in poverty. Rights groups such as Human Rights Watch say oil revenues have largely enriched the ruling elite while leaving many citizens without access to basic services. President Teor Obiang Nguema Msago has ruled the country since he seized power in a 1979 coup, and he is widely accused of authoritarianism and corruption. Leo is scheduled to meet with him at the presidential palace and address government officials and members of the diplomatic corps. Observers said the Pope faces a delicate task of encouraging the local Catholic Church and speaking on justice without appearing to legitimize an entrenched political system. For decades, the Church has played a central social as well as spiritual role in the country and often walks a fine line between providing a prophetic voice and grappling with institutional survival. The Reverend Sebastian Nguema Mukai, rector of the La Puissima Seminary in Bata, Equatorial Guinea, said the Pope's presence invites us to examine ourselves as leaders and as citizens and to ask whether we are truly serving justice, dignity, and the common good. McCoy also said the visit offers an opportunity for renewal. It is a moment for the Church to be strengthened, he said, adding that the Pope's message is likely to challenge both leaders and ordinary citizens to live out their responsibilities with greater integrity and compassion. Maye also framed the visit as a moment of grace, describing it as a gesture of closeness that renews faith and invites reconciliation. The Pope's arrival is also resonating beyond Catholic communities. The Reverend Manuel Ando Awano, a Pentecostal pastor in Malabo, said the visit is a reminder that faith must confront social realities. The message is clear, he said. Faith must be visible in how people live, in justice, in fairness, and how leaders treat their people. Residents expressed both excitement and cautious hope. We are proud to welcome him, said Maria Asano, a Malabo resident, but people are also hoping this visit will shine a light on the struggles many families face every day. During his stay, Leo is expected to meet bishops, travel to the mainland cities of Bata and Mangamo, the president's hometown, and celebrate Mass with thousands of faithful. On Thursday, the final day of his visit, he will preside over a large public mass at Stadium in Malabo before returning to Rome. For many, the visit is more than a ceremonial moment, but a test of whether faith can inspire real change in a country where wealth and hardship exist side by side. People are listening carefully, Awano said. They want to hear words that speak to their lives and maybe words that can help change them. And that ends the article on the Pope's visit. Next up is an article entitled, A TPUSA Tour Stop Triggered a Pro-LGBTQ Event at Baylor. Then came the Baptist blowback. Byline reads, these bylines are just little teasers, so you listen. In response to the All Our Neighbors event, the Baptist General Convention of Texas will revisit its relationship with the Christian University. When the conservative political group Turning Point USA scheduled a campus tour stop at Baylor University in Waco, Texas for Wednesday, April 22nd, organizers advertised it as a chance to honor Charlie's mission and as a venue for enacting free speech. But though free speech was part of their program, TPUSA, which was led by activist Charlie Kirk until his assassination in September, probably didn't expect to be the catalyst for an event welcoming LGBTQ activists to speak at the Christian University. The competing event called All Our Neighbors is the result of grassroots activism from progressive student leaders. They're, TPUSA, pushing a message that is aligned with Christian nationalism, said J.W. Lestrape, president of Baylor College's Democrats chapter. We're going to push back on it by celebrating the marginalized folks that the Christian nationalist vision excludes. Baylor has maintained that hosting the dual events is part of its commitment to open discussion and said the events will be aligned with institutional policies. Historically, Baylor has opened its doors to a wide range of student-invited speakers with differing viewpoints on theology, politics, research, and many other subjects, a spokesperson told RNS in a statement, adding that Baylor doesn't institutionally endorse the views of event speakers. But the events have generated controversy among stakeholders, including the Baptist General Convention of Texas, a group of Texas churches that announced Friday they would be reviewing their historic relationship with the university. Event participants told RNS the tensions surrounding the events are emblematic of larger religious and political trends. It's two very different visions of the future and of what is possible and the kind of America as well as college campuses that we want, said the Reverend Paul Brandeis Rauschenbusch, a Baptist minister and president and CEO of Interfaith Alliance, who is speaking at the All Our Neighbors event. The Baylor stop on the This Is the Turning Point tour was first advertised as featuring Border Czar Tom Homan, Donald Trump Jr., and commentator Benny Johnson as of Tuesday. However, the tour website lists Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton in lieu of Trump Jr. Weeks ahead of the event, conservative students told the student paper they were grateful to have such influential speakers coming to campus. TPUSA Baylor President Peter Fernandez told the Baylor Laureate the event was about encouraging dialogue. Nothing that Turning Point stands for and nothing that Turning Point speaks about is contradictory to Christian or university values, he said. The organization is not explicitly Christian, but has ramped up its faith efforts in recent years, expanding its footprint on Christian campuses and recruiting pastors to be part of its brand. Students have praised TPUSA for its on-the-ground support of student groups and for emboldening them to speak out on campuses they see as hostile to conservative views. The group frames itself as promoting free markets and limited government, but Kirk also earned criticism for his rhetoric about reclaiming the country for Christ, for describing immigration without assimilation as invasion, and for saying a Bible verse about stoning gay people to death was God's perfect law. The event prompted pushback from some Baylor students, alumni, and faculty. On social media, the TPUSA Baylor group posted photos of events posters torn down. Interesting that those who claim to foster inclusivity seem to have their own version, and we don't fit their mold, the caption said. One faculty member concerned about the event was Greg Garrett, the Carol Ann McDaniel Hanks Chair of Literature and Culture at Baylor, who published an op-ed in early April characterizing the TPUSA event as un-Christian. I am more and more uncomfortable and impatient with Christianity that doesn't recognize the humanity of all God's children, said Garrett, who is the sole Baylor faculty member on TPUSA's professor watch lists due to his public work on racial justice and LGBTQ inclusion. I hope that Turning Point has a good experience at Baylor, but also I would hope that more of Baylor rubs off on Turning Point than vice versa, he told RNS. When Sky Perryman, a Baylor alumna and the president and CEO of Democracy Forward, delivered the Witten Endowed Lecture at Baylor's Religion Department on March 24th, she questioned whether the university would allow voices across the political spectrum to be heard. She told RNS Turning Point is an advocacy organization whose work on immigration she sees as in contrast with many of the values that underlie the Baptist and Christian faith, especially with respect to loving one's neighbor. If Baylor allowed TPUSA to advocate for its controversial views on campus, she asked, what about progressive Christians? For years, Baylor University, which defines marriage as between a man and a woman, did not allow LGBTQ student groups at the university. Its first LGBTQ student group was established in 2022, but is not permitted to advocate for views contrary to Baylor's teaching on human sexuality. Last summer, Baylor celebrated, then rescinded, a $643,401 grant awarded to fund research on the exclusion of LGBTQIA plus individuals and women within congregations. As alumni and professors spoke publicly of their TPUSA-related concerns, student leaders of the Baylor chapters of College Democrats, NAACP, Students Demand Action, Hearts for the Homeless, and Texas Rising began mobilizing to offer an alternative event. By April 9th, Baylor had approved the All Our Neighbors event, which will also occur on Wednesday and features LGBTQ Christian advocates, including Roshan Bush and Kelly Robinson, president of the Human Rights Campaign, who both identify as LGBTQ. The call to love thy neighbor persists across our differences, Robinson told RNS in a statement. As a queer Black Catholic woman, I carry the truth that the same God who made one of us made all of us. And that truth demands we build a future where everyone can live freely, openly, and equally. Organizers framed the event as a way to celebrate marginalized voices rather than an anti-TPUSA rally. A press release called the event the first time that students at Baylor have been permitted to host leading gay advocates on campus. Though Baylor debated this characterization, telling RNS, Christian LGBTQ author and Gay Christian Network founder Justin Lee gave a Baylor lecture in 2019. Still, the response from supporters and critics points to the event's significance. Does Baylor still know the difference between permitting speech and platforming ideas that undermine its professed Christian convictions? Between inviting inquiry and standing on orthodoxy? Asked Christina Crenshaw, assistant professor at Arizona Christian and a former lecturer at Baylor on X. Intellectual diversity is not a substitute for theological clarity. The Baptist General Convention of Texas, a state convention that's had close ties with Baylor since the university's founding in 1845, released a statement on April 10th saying it was hearing strong concerns about the All Our Neighbors event. A week later, the convention, which nominates a quarter of Baylor's board, announced it would review its relationship with the university. As executive director, I agree that hosting speakers who are Christian, identify as gay, and practice LGBTQ plus advocacy at a university-approved event is inconsistent with the convention's long-standing views on biblical sexuality. BGCT executive director Julio Guarnieri said in a letter to BGCT churches on Friday, it is unlikely that the viewpoints to be shared at the event and others may not represent either BGCT's or Baylor's official positions, and convention messengers have made it clear that the traditional view of biblical sexuality is a matter of fellowship and harmonious cooperation. The BGCT, which reportedly contributes 0.001% of Baylor's $995.8 million annual budget, did not answer questions about whether the convention also had concerns about the TPUSA event. Perryman told RNS she hopes the All Our Neighbors event will prompt Baylor to revisit its student group policies, which currently allow advocacy from groups like TPUSA, but not from LGBTQ groups. But Baylor said there are no discussions to change its policy, and LaStrape said the only specific ask coming from student organizers was that the university agree to host their event, though he hopes it opens doors for similar events in the future. And this ends the article on Baylor. And next up, we have an article entitled, Church-State Separation is a Lie, Says Trump's Religious Liberty Commission Chair. Byline reads, Church-State separation ensues. We are all free to live as ourselves and believe as we choose, as long as we don't harm others, a church-state separationist countered. Okay, the leader of President Donald Trump's Religious Liberty Commission said that church and state separation is a falsehood at the group's final meeting, drawing criticism from an advocacy group that supports it. At a Monday, April 13th hearing at the Museum of the Bible in Washington, D.C., Texas Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, a Republican and the chair of the commission, asked, "Would it not be a good recommendation that every school, every university, every business has to have that one sheet on the bulletin board about protecting people's religious liberty, and that the separation of church and state is the biggest lie that's been told in America since our founding?" His question was posed to Helen Alvare, a law professor at George Mason University's Antonin Scalia Law School, as Patrick compared the notion of such a bulletin board announcement to the federal notices from the Occupational Safety and Health Administration that are posted in classrooms and other buildings that aim to promote safety and present hazards. Alvare, a one-time top staffer for the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops, represents the bishop's anti-abortion stance and, a witness at the hearing, agreed with Patrick's question. "It would be an appropriate time to put up some information about these sorts of rights," she said. "You're responding to the signs of the times where this has been misunderstood. And like any other thing where people are unclear about their rights, this might be a way to clarify them." Rachel Lasser, the president and CEO of Americans United for Separation of Church and State, rejected Patrick's stance. "Church-state separation ensures we are all free to live as ourselves and believe as we choose, as long as we don't harm others," Lasser said in a statement issued Monday. "It allows us to all come together as equals to build a stronger democracy. It's an American original, something we should be proud of, fight for, and cherish." Trump signed an executive order last May at a National Day of Prayer ceremony in the White House Rose Garden that created the commission, saying it would release a report on the foundations of religious liberty in America, current threats to domestic religious liberty, and programs to increase awareness of and celebrate America's peaceful religious pluralism. The commission members have included some of Trump's evangelical allies, Catholic bishops, a rabbi, and TV host Phil McGraw. In February, Americans United joined Democracy Forward in filing a lawsuit against the commission, challenging its composition that included one non-Christian and stating that its Christian members do not represent the full diversity of Christian faith. The suit was filed on behalf of interfaith Muslim, Sikh, and Hindu organizations. Americans United and Democracy Forward have since sought a preliminary injunction to prevent the publication of a commission report while their case is considered by federal district court. Members of the commission include Pastor Paula White Cain, senior advisor to the White House Faith Office, Dr. Ben Carson, former secretary for the Department of Housing and Urban Development under Trump, Catholic Bishop Robert Barron, leader of the Diocese of Winona-Rochester in Minnesota, Cardinal Timothy Dolan, retired Archbishop of New York, and Franklin Graham. And that's about it, the time we have run out of for today's episode of Religion in the News. We hope you enjoyed listening, and please join us next time. I'm Katie Neuhauser, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Religion in the News is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. Please call 919-832-5138 with questions. Thank you.